Professor Toop, great to see you, albeit on screen.
Yes.
And I've been greatly looking forward to this conversation. You and I have, of course, spent some time already discussing the expected growth of strategic philanthropy and the historic opportunity that this represents for institutions like Cambridge, but also the wider social sector. Everything that, that is impacted by it. But first off, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you and the university and the Judge Business School, of course, for once again giving the Center for Strategic Philanthropy a home within the University of Cambridge. As with many things strategic, it perhaps took some time to get its own strategic design right, but of course that time was itself a great investment in setting it up for success and, of course, to enable it to hit the ground running. So thank you again.
Well, thanks to you, really, Badr, for your vision in helping us move this forward and of course, your very concrete support. It wouldn't have happened without you. So thank you very much.
Thank you. As I just alluded to, Professor Stephen Toop is the Vice Chancellor of the University of Cambridge, scholar. Prior to joining the University of Cambridge, he spent 3 years as the Director of the Monk School of Global Affairs at the University of Toronto, and before that served for 8 years as President and Vice Chancellor of the University of British Columbia, and before that, I believe it at McGill University as Dean of Law. He also has hands-on experience running one of Canada's most respected philanthropic foundation, as president of the Trudeau Foundation, supporting the critical and creative thinkers who make meaningful contribution to social issues. As an expert in international law, international legal theory, human rights, and international development, Professor Toop has worked in a variety of roles in the Canadian public sector, as well as advising and working with a number of international NGOs and intergovernmental agencies such as the UN. And he brings all of these diverse experiences, and plus many others I'm sure I haven't mentioned, to his stewardship of the University of Cambridge. And I've had the pleasure of getting to know Professor Toop over the past couple of years. And it's always insightful to hear him speak with passion and experience, of course, about many of the issues that are on today. Professor Toop, as we reflected many times in advance of the establishment of the Center for Strategic Philanthropy, a disproportionate number of the world's fastest growing economies today can be found in the emerging markets, with trillions of dollars expected to be passed on to the next generation of aspiring philanthropists in these markets within the next couple of decades. What impact do you think that this could have on the global economy and society over the next few decades? And how can we help to prepare this next generation for these major shifts?
Well, there's absolutely no question that we're seeing a fundamental correction, I'll call it, in the historic imbalance between the global north and the global south. And philanthropy is going to be deeply affected and part of that rebalancing process, I think. So we're going to see philanthropic capital emerging much more from growth markets. And we're going to see, therefore, an influx of philanthropists. And I think, interestingly, many of them are going to be second-generation philanthropists, families who've done very well, built a wealth, and then in the second generation are starting to think about how to deploy that wealth in ways that can reshape societies over time. And that's extremely exciting. But I also think, and I'll be honest, I think it's going to be a bit of a challenge for a lot of traditional institutions that have been used to the more foundation model, if I may put it that way, of philanthropic funding. So I think what we're going to see more and more, and it's happening all around the world, but I think it will be even more driven by the global south. We're seeing an interest in what I'll call philanthropic investment and engagement, rather than simply handing over resources for the best of all purposes. So I think we're going to start to see hybrid models, partnerships being developed, social impact funds, and much more active engagement on the part of philanthropists from the global south. It's intriguing. I was looking at some of the statistics, and the Charities Aid Foundation World Giving Index shows us that more people are giving than ever before around the world, which is great news, and that the largest increase is coming from the global south, Indonesia, Kenya, Singapore, Malaysia, South Africa, the UAE. So this is going to have a tremendous impact on philanthropy globally over the course of the next couple of decades. So I see it as exciting and positive, although, as I said, there will be challenges.
A defining feature of the Center for Strategic Philanthropy is that it, although it's housed, of course, proudly in Cambridge, it's properly and authentically reaching out of Cambridge and connecting in practical and meaningful ways with philanthropic and other communities in the world's high growth markets. It's, of course, recognized that this form of localized collaboration is essential to the center's mission. As the University of Cambridge itself becomes more global in nature, adapting to global shifts, what have you found to be the keys to doing this successfully as a large institution?
A great question, because I do think that as one operates more and more in the global sphere, it requires different cultural instincts, if I may put it that way. And I think some of them really relate to some similar learning that took place in the development sector over the course of the last couple of decades. I think it's fair to say that both philanthropy and development have historically been somewhat siloed, competitive rather than collaborative in their approaches. I used to do some work in evaluating development initiatives all around the world, and it was always frustrating to see the number of siloed endeavors that were going on that were just not leveraging effectively the resources that were being deployed. And I think universities also have to learn from that. And I'd say that the single greatest learning is that you actually have to listen to people on the ground. I like to say that universities are very good often at telling people to behave and what they should do. It's part of our natural instinct. But in this area, we also have to get better at listening. Because the big questions that we all face around the world today, COVID, challenges to democratic institutions, all the issues related to inequality, these are things that are not going to be dealt with without real collaboration. And philanthropy shouldn't be coming in and duplicating efforts that are already being made by others. We have to find ways of developing partnerships amongst NGOs, agencies like the World Bank, governments, academic institutions, and philanthropy. And that's absolutely at the heart of what we are trying to do at the Center for Strategic Philanthropy here at Cambridge. As you said, Badr, the goal is to be working with people on the ground, analyzing, collecting, and analyzing data, and then making it available and helping to build the kinds of partnerships and connections with like-minded organizations that will really allow us to reach scale. And I guess that's the biggest question. How do we make sure that the work we're doing is at scale, not just pilots all over the place, but learning from those pilots, figuring out how we can really make the world change for the better? So I should just end this section by saying that the CSP is already beginning this process, and it's soon going to issue its first full-scale report, which is called Philanthropy in the Time of COVID-19, is the North-South balance of power finally shifting? So a really important question, and it's based on work that's being done with local stakeholders in various parts of the world.
Yeah, I know, and I look forward to and very excited about that launch, hopefully within the coming weeks, which is excellent. One of the other main pillars of the center's work is its research programs. We just talked about a report. it's recognized, of course, the research itself is a means to an end and not necessarily an end in itself. The end objective is, of course, achieving some defined impact, which for the center is enhancing the form and practice of philanthropy in and from the world's emerging markets. From your perspective, what are some of the main questions that need to be answered in relation to the practice of philanthropy in these high growth markets? And how can we ensure that this research is one, fulfilling real needs, and two, doesn't just gather dust on shelves and actually gets into the hands of individuals and organizations that need to make the most of it?
Well, I think it starts with this premise of listening again and working the ground. There's no point in doing abstracted research in this field that isn't connected to what people actually need to understand. The other piece that connects back to some of our previous discussion is that philanthropy has historically, because of the somewhat siloed nature of its practices, not been an area where there's been a lot of good cross-philanthropic data collection. So what we're trying to do at the center is work on the ground and try to coordinate the information gathering so that we're actually bringing to bear in the discussion real data that matters to people who have to make decisions philanthropically and in terms of the work of their organizations. So we need to know who is giving, who is working with whom, and crucially, where are there gaps that actually need to be filled? And I'm sure that we will discover there are many. The Center for Strategic Philanthropy is concentrating on emerging markets, as you say, particularly in Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. And there's a fundamental commitment to ensuring that this is impact-driven research, that it is eminently practical research. Look, believe me, there's nothing wrong with blue skies thinking. Cambridge historically has been brilliant at that. But for this kind of work, that's not what the need is. The need is to be working at the grassroots, talking and communicating with people who are actually trying to make decisions about how to make their communities better. And that's an exciting opportunity. This notion of sort of community-based research, stakeholder engagement is fundamental to the future of the center. And I think it will actually make a really big contribution because of the dearth of data that currently exists.
Exciting indeed, absolutely. In addition to Cambridge, as I've mentioned, of course, you've held positions with a number of other institutions and education institutions, and you've also worked closely with other government with government agencies and international agencies, in addition to running a foundation. From these diverse sectorial experiences that you have had, what do you think are the keys to facilitating successful collaborations between academic institutions, businesses, governments, and the social sector?
You know, it is harder than we sometimes imagine. And I guess one should be realistic about that. And I think that the reason it's harder is because the cultures of these organizations are often quite different. And the timeframes for decision making can be different. And types of diversity in the be different. So I think it's really crucial that as we engage in partnerships, that we're friends with each other and that we don't try to make those differences don't exist and listen to each other and work them on a day-to-day basis. I have a lot of experience working in Africa development work, which you realize so strong. Sometimes when one thinks one's communicating, one isn't really hearing what the other person is saying. And so that is absolutely fundamental. It's back to this listening point, which I keep emphasizing. But I think the other piece that I would want to stress here is the power of diversity. Again, the kinds of challenges we're facing will not be solved by any sector alone. Government can't do it, business can't do it, academics can't do it, and philanthropists can't do it. We need to be working collaboratively, and that requires us to be open to a diversity of voices. And I have always believed, even within my own institutions, that we're stronger if we have diverse voices, because I think we start to interrogate things in different ways. And of course, we bring different lived experience to our decision-making. So it's crucial that we all together find ways to genuinely listen, to try to hear what other people are saying, to acknowledge differences of culture, and to be really, frankly, excited about voices that bring to the table different perspectives than our own.
Yeah, absolutely. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, we seem to be living in a world that was becoming increasingly distrustful of expertise in a wide variety of fields, including academic expertise in some cases. How has this phenomenon impacted institutions such as the University of Cambridge, if at all? And are you hopeful that the experience of the pandemic might begin to reverse some of these unfortunate trends, or might it even accelerate them? And how would that hamper our ability to come up with global solutions to our global challenges?
Yeah, it's a really difficult question, because I think that there are contrary trends happening all at the same time, and figuring out which of them will become more dominant over the next while is going to be hard to understand. So you're right that, you know, one of the trends we've definitely been seeing is this growth in what is often called populist sentiment, and the idea that everyone's opinion is equally valid, whether you know anything about a subject or don't know anything about a subject, and that experts are pointy-headed and they're self-interested. So all of that's been playing out. And yet at the same time with COVID, we desperately need for expertise to be brought in to give advice. But now we're also seeing a bit of a reaction against that expertise, and the idea that, you know, we can't just rely on, quotes, the science, because even scientists have different perspectives and different approaches. And government has to take into consideration not only science, but politics and economics and all of these other things. So I think we're in a period of really deep complexity when it comes to society's understanding how to process the information, even say the knowledge comes out of institutions right now. At the same time, I don't want to put too much emphasis on the old bugbear of social media, because everyone loves to pick on social media, and I'm one of them. But it is fair to say that with social media, you can amplify really crazy, unfounded ideas extraordinarily. And to try to combat that is really important, it seems to me. And one of the ways that we have to do that as institutions is build the sense of trust that we are actually operating in the public interest. And a place like Cambridge, obviously, I think, does operate in the public interest, but sometimes in the way that we can project our advice or our analysis, it can sound, frankly, condescending. It can sound as if we're disengaged from the real challenges that people are facing on the ground. And that is precisely what the Center for Strategic Philanthropy does not want to do. It wants to step in and, again, be part of a conversation with people on the ground, so that we're not coming in as disconnected experts, but as people profoundly integrated into the wider community. I also think the convening power of a place like the Center for Strategic Philanthropy is going to be really important, because I think it's going to be a place, I hope, that will empower young, up-and-coming philanthropists to find their voice too, and thereby to amplify it from the global south into the wider world. So that's really one of the fundamental hopes of the center. And I think it will be powerful for the university as a whole, because it will help undermine that sense that somehow we're disconnected from what's happening in the world that people are facing on a day-to-day basis. At least that's my hope.
And mine too, absolutely. And just to go back to what you said, something you said before in relation to trust and the mistrust perhaps that's developing, and despite the fact that there is so much information out there, and we've had this huge scale up of data and information and perhaps noise as well. You some that people aren't listening. So that really goes back to your point and the old adage that God gave us two ears and one mouth so we can listen twice as much as we speak, which unfortunately doesn't often happen. But I think that is absolutely a trend. But hopefully, I'd like to think that the pandemic and some of the lessons learned from it will help to accelerate more reliance on the right sort of expertise. But again, expertise that properly listens and understands the issues and the problems that that expertise is trying to address.
Exactly. That's speaking to real issues that people are struggling with day to day.
Absolutely. So, Professor Toop, your insights are not only greatly appreciated, but also very important to guide the center's team, execution of the vision and the mission of the center. And whilst this was, of course, an unconventional year to start anything or to launch anything, it's very encouraging to hear and to see the center get off to a strong start. And I have no doubt that with your continued support and guidance, the center will meet and indeed exceed its already ambitious goals and really make a meaningful and measurable strategic impact on the philanthropic landscape in these fastest growing regions of the world. Thank you again. And I very much look forward to speaking with you again soon and with a bit of luck in person. Thank you.
I sure hope so, Badr. It's great to speak with you even this way. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.